The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, August 2nd, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks, and oh, is it casual around here? Half the crew didn't even show up. Jamie's at a secret conference again. She goes to more conferences than any corporate person I know.
Diplomat.
It's unbelievable. It's Friday, so of course Michael's not here because this is a weekend adjacent day.
It's the other end of Monday.
Right, exactly. But I'm here. Brendan's here. Matt's here. And soon to join us in studio will be Alex Perrine, ladies and gentlemen. And then later, I think this is the confirmation I got from Judy Gold. Can you do it? And the confirmation, I think so. So we shall see. Meanwhile, on the program today, the Manhattan DA subpoenas Trump Inc. And the pro-impeachment caucus crosses half of the Democrats. We are now in the majority of Democrats in the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives publicly said they support the starting of an impeachment inquiry. Meanwhile, congratulations to the Republicans. You're going to be Lily White in the House of Representatives. And you will also have less women than men named Jim, following even more Republican congressional retirements. Breaking news, Chuck Schumer is alive. Wants everyone to know not to criticize Obama or get too heavily invested in this whole Medicare for all thing.
I do think Bernie proposed in a literal circular firing squad was a bit much.
That was a mistake. Meanwhile, Lindsey Graham blows up the Senate rules and does so in service of locking up children for an extra 75 days. Deal struck with Taliban for a partial withdrawal of U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Good thing. Now the bad thing, the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty dies today because why not? And Lock Her Up is now supposed to be the soothing chant that we hear at Trump rallies. John Ratcliffe keeps lying in his bid for becoming the intel chief of the country. And the EPA, formerly known as the Environmental Protection Agency, to make polluting the air easier for corporations. Got a couple more. Lastly, Liz Cheney attacks indigenous Americans for, and this is horrible, destroying, quote, the Western way of life. And lastly, a new report. Between 2016 and 2018, counties formerly subject to the preclearance provision of the National Voting Rights Act because of racist voting initiatives have purged 40% more voters than other counties over those 2 years.
Gotta trim the fat.
Just a coincidence, I'm sure, because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, John Roberts told us that racism was over in this country And he said that, I think, at least 6 or 7 years ago. So even if he wasn't totally right then, I'm sure he is now.
Yep. Racism's over. Brown people illegally voting is in full swing, though.
There you go. And, I mean, the idea that brown people would line up and keep changing their hats so they could go in and vote more times, I think, like, what do you expect, people? If you're going to do stuff like that, it's going to create racism.
That's where racism came from.
That's where racism came from. Is all the different hats that people wanted to wear when they voted.
Voting disguises.
So we are still basking in the fallout from the Democratic debates. And I would say on Wednesday night, or was it Wednesday night? On Wednesday night, when we left this building, at I think I was here quite late, frankly. With the idea, it was my supposition that we were going to have a narrative amongst the media who follow this stuff, and maybe even more insiders within the sort of, like, you know, political junkies and activists and whatnot, that the narrative would be Joe Biden's looking a little shaky. And there was definitely some evidence of that. We have done a focused group based upon one person, Matt's mom, where apparently that did not necessarily get widely disseminated, which I'm not terribly surprised about. I think your casual observers probably aren't getting that message yet. Like I say, if he stumbles again in the next debate, that's the only thing you're going to hear. And it does appear that there's a 50-50 chance we're going to have a single debate next time, that we're only going to have 10 people in the race by September based upon criteria that must be met by about 3.5 weeks from now, August 28th, involving number of donors and involving breaking certain thresholds in polls. I think you got to break like a 2% threshold, which I think is reasonable. I mean, I appreciate the idea that the Democratic Party wants to be as democratic, small d, as possible, or big D, I should say. Small d. One of the Ds. And but I think saying that you need more than 1.3% in the polls or 1.8% in the polls to qualify for the third debate, it seems fair to me. Otherwise, we'll have John Delaney in this thing for the rest of eternity because he's a millionaire and he can pay for himself to go through it. So the other things that seem to be sort of like coming out of this, and we haven't seen any, I haven't seen any polling yet. Have you seen any polling coming out of the debates?
That'll probably come this weekend.
And, but there is a sense that the media really hates to give Bernie Sanders any credit at all. That's just, I think, the fact. They're more willing to do so with Warren. And in some ways, I think, you know, certainly the feeling that night was that they both did great and they were doing it. It seemed like they were, you know, it was Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid type of situation. I'm not saying one was Butch and one was Sundance. I don't know. You, everybody has their own favorite. And I'm saying in the middle part of the movie.
Yeah, for our younger viewers who might be in college and high school still, what is this Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid?
Well, it was Paul Newman and Robert Redford. Yes, and they and they were actors, and they were going around and having fun, robbing banks and whatnot. And but they were good. They were always very polite about it. Now, of course, the end of the movie didn't work out so well because they went down to Bolivia and they ended up getting, well, whatever. But
ooh,
nevertheless.
It's bad foreshadowing.
Right. Well, but for that one moment, they were reminiscent of that. And but in the wake of this, I mean, I think like you get the notion that there will be no bigger supporter of Bernie Sanders if he wins the nomination than Elizabeth Warren. And you get no, and you get the same sense that there'll be no bigger supporter of Elizabeth Warren if she wins the nomination than Bernie Sanders. And in the meantime, I think this is great because they're both building, and they have distinct coalitions. And we talked about this the other day. They have distinct coalitions, different age cohorts. The biggest difference is that Bernie Sanders has 61% of Bernie Sanders supporters have less than a college degree. It is almost exactly the flip for Elizabeth Warren. 57% of her supporters are college educated. There's also an age disparity. Bernie Sanders, 64% of his support comes from people under the age of 45. With Elizabeth Warren, 60% of her support comes from people over the age of 45. And so Sanders does 22% of his support comes from black people and 17% come from Hispanic, whereas compared to Warren, where it's only 10% black people and 9% Hispanic. And then men and women, Bernie Sanders is exactly 50-50 with men and women, which is interesting. And Warren is got 60% women, 40% men. So I would imagine there's some overlap, but there's definitely room for some migration there and appealing to some people. Now, the only thing that sort of like, you know, makes me a little bit nervous is I look at like Joe Biden, 56% of his support comes from women. He's number two to Warren in terms of support from women. So anyways, the long and short of this is basically to say that we could be looking in the next month, we'll know by the end of this month, at a debate that happens in September that is going to be with 10 people. And those 10 people will obviously include Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. Then I think it's unclear. There's, I think, one or two others that have already sort of passed the threshold. I think Beto. And I'm not sure who else, but we'll see. But nevertheless, the big percentage people are going to be Biden, Warren, Sanders, maybe Harris. You know, she didn't have a great night. Could be Cory Booker, who, you know, people are saying. We'll find out when the polls come out. But let's watch this clip of Elizabeth Warren. And I have to say that, like, the big knock on Warren from people 3 months ago was that there was not a huge confidence that she had the ability to beat Donald Trump. And I think part of that was a function of a lot of things. I think people were concerned about the way that her campaign handled the whole Indian heritage, Native American heritage thing. And I think there was also just sort of a sense of like, she didn't seem, I don't know, that glib or nobody could, you know, when I would talk to people about it, and I felt some of the same, and it was very hard to articulate what exactly it was about her presentation that didn't seem to be, I don't know, like glib or practiced in some way or confident or I don't know what it was. Because as I say those adjectives, I don't think those adjectives capture it really. But there's been clips that have come out, particularly in the wake of the debates, but particularly in wake of this debate, which I think have been really impressive. And she has changed her rhetoric. She has changed her rhetoric to appeal to Sanders people. And you can see it in things like structural the economy needs a structural change. And you can hear it in the context of talking about movements and grassroots more. And it's very adept. I don't know how much of it is legit or not, but it's very adept. This is a little bit long, but watch this, because it's certainly worthwhile. This is on CNN, and this comes in the wake, and I don't know if we played this, the one with Chris Matthews, we did the other day, where Chris Matthews was insisting that she just say the words, taxes will go up with Medicare and for all, and she would not say that, because she wanted to frame it as costs to individuals. Because at the end of the day, it is the case that people don't just look at taxes and say, you know, like every dollar I pay in taxes is worth $2 that I pay in health care. No, that's just not the way that people do their budgets. And she was relentless. She didn't waver at all. And I have to say, Chris Matthews was steaming, which I took a little bit of enjoyment from. But here is Elizabeth Warren with a crew of CNN, and it is there's like 6 to 8 people, and listen to this. This is good stuff.
Here's the national election. Donald Trump has already made basically his one sentence pitch, and that is anything in your life that's bad, like you haven't gotten a raise, you know, you're worried about sending your kids to school, whatever it is, blame them. People who aren't the same color as you, people who aren't born where you were born, people who don't worship like you, people who don't sound like, blame them. That is his message. My message is, you got things that are broken in your life, I'll tell you exactly why. It's because giant corporations, billionaires, have seized our government. And for decades now, they have been making that government work for a thinner and thinner slice at the top. And they do it mostly out of the headlines. Just a little tilt here, just a little shift there, just a little exception, until over time, they've gotten richer and richer and richer and richer, and everybody else is left eating dirt. That is the message. And that's what we need to get out there and talk about. And then, not enough just to say it's wrong, to say we actually have a plan to fix it. We go after the corruption head on.
Pause it for 1 second. Now, and Alex Breen, welcome to the program. We got him on mic?
Yep.
Okay, there he is. You just heard that half. We had another half of this. But, I mean, you can almost tick off the, and I think it's consistent with her plans and her proposal, but you can almost tick off the different things that she is adopting from the Bernie Sanders critique.
Yeah.
Things like billionaires,
yeah.
Things like a thin slice at the top. I mean, that's just a sort of a less granular version of, you know, Bernie Sanders 1%, 90 mm-hmm. Percent differentials. It's not enough just to have plans. Mm-hmm. You've actually got to have a plan to do it. Yeah. I mean, this is very adept. She's taking these things from Bernie, and Bernie's never going to get out there and say don't say these things. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's not gonna go out there and be like, you're a phony, you're stealing from me. He's going to say, I welcome her critique. What's notable to me is that with Warren, I think she has, in her usual political style, a lot of specificity. And what is interesting about this is that it's very general, which is that is what I feel like is being borrowed from Bernie. Like, usually she's very specific about the industries and the people and the company she's talking about. And now she's speaking much more generally about the system.
Right, about a system, and she's talking about structural reform. And she's saying stuff like, and you get stuck with dirt.
Yeah, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like everybody in the room when that came up was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, she's saying this on TV to people.
Yeah.
But let's continue.
Shoot this economy in a couple of basic ways. Make it easier to join a union. Give workers some power. Pass a wealth tax and protect our democracy. That needs to be a part of what we talk about that we never talked about tonight. We need to make the economy and the democracy.
You make,
but how do you, not just for everyone, but for, and not just for those at the top, but make
but,
it work
but
for
it's,
everyone.
But it's a lot of power and influence. You say it won't be corrupt power and influence, but it's still a lot of power and influence in Washington.
Right.
What convinces you that people, especially in some of these states that are, let's just say, to the right of Massachusetts, are not ready to support that?
Look, I think when we talk with people, for example, about the tax on billionaires, they are ready to support it. When they talk about cutting their kids' student loan debt, man, they're in. Talk to people about what it's like today on child care. How many mamas can't finish their education, can't take a job? How many daddies are saying, I can't do this, we simply cannot get good
care for our children?
You
know what I like about you?
So what I like about you? You make me feel like help is on the way. You make me feel like something good could happen in America. I just want to say that. You make me feel good. You make me feel like it's hard out here.
Pause it for 1 second. And so Van Jones has to like step in and make it about him, right?
Exactly.
That's nice. That's nice.
Let me get on camera for a second.
Right, exactly. You know what I like about you? I'm going to say something so that we make this about what it does for me. And but it's, oh gosh, I don't know if he can help himself, but continue.
Point. This is what optimism is all about. Optimism is about knowing what's broken, laying out a plan to fix it, and then building a movement to make it happen. It means we have the power.
Just final question, because I know you got to go. For people who are trying to choose between you and former Vice President Biden, why are you a better candidate?
Look, I'm not here to diss any other Democrat. Just get somebody else for that job. That's not me. I've laid out my vision of what I believe we can do as a country, and I'll get out there.
But why then is just fix?
All right, and I would just say on that last part that she's not. I hope she's saying specifically she's not there in that moment, in that seat, to diss another Democrat. But I hope that when we see, hopefully, her on stage with Joe Biden, that we do see some of that.
Yeah. I hope so, too.
Desperately.
I mean, everyone wants the the way the last debate draft worked out, I thought was sort of beneficial for everyone because they don't necessarily at this stage, like Warren doesn't want to be seen as an attack dog yet, I feel like, but letting Booker and Harris do that is what they want so far.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right about that. And you don't want to, you want a, hopefully a weakened Biden going in to September, frankly, and I don't know that he's going to be much weakened, but I do think that the sort of like undergirding of the idea that he is the strongest candidate, it seems to me, and I mentioned this before you came in, it seems to me that's happening.
Yeah.
But let's talk about that more in a moment. Let's play this clip from Bernie, who... And the premise here is, you know, we just saw Elizabeth Warren, and I don't know, from your perspective, has she gotten better? I mean, look, it's inevitable they all get better.
Yeah.
Although, not necessarily with Biden. I mean, you know, just being honest here, folks. It's true. Biden's not. He's not.
Go back and watch him in a 2008 debate versus now.
It's stunning. And particularly, like, compared to Warren and Sanders.
Yeah.
I mean, age impacts people in different ways. And I don't know if Biden is older than them or not, but he certainly, he hit a threshold where it's different.
Mm-hmm.
But from your perspective, has Warren gotten significantly better?
I don't know. I mean, She's gotten better at doing that particular TV thing, I guess, right? Because what you were talking about before, where a few months ago, no one could quite put their finger on what it was, but they thought she didn't have enough of something. I do think it was because of her background, a professional background in part, where the thing that people were worried about was that she's professorial.
Right.
And she has now gotten better at sort of practiced down-to-earthness.
Right.
That's what I think that she's actually had.
Right. She's translating this stuff that is specific into sort of more general and general notions that capture the experiences of more people.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So here's Bernie Sanders on Morning Joe. I think, was this morning?
This was just on MSNBC yesterday.
Here is, and this, I find this fascinating. I mean, it's part of, and we've been saying this for a while, that Bernie Sanders is talking about not just having the plans, but how to execute the plans in the context of a highly polarized country. No matter who wins, they're still going to be dealing with, I mean, despite the fact that Joe Biden seems to think that it's all going to go away, they're going to be dealing with almost half of the country, which, you know, support the likes of Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump.
The ideas that I am talking about, whether it is taking on the greed and the corruption and the illegal activity of the pharmaceutical industry, whether it is guaranteeing health care to all people through a Medicare for all single payer system, I think that those ideas are popular. And I think once we rally the American people, which is what I intend to do as president, I'm going to run the presidency differently than anyone else. I'm not only going to be commander in chief, I'm going to be organizer in chief. We're going to go out to Kentucky, a very, very poor state where people are earning low wages, can't afford health care, can't afford insurance or pharmaceuticals. And we're going to rally the people there to tell their senators to stand with ordinary Americans and not with wealthy campaign contributors.
And I mean, I think he made a point of saying Kentucky, too, yeah. Because right now there is a protest in Harlan County. I mean, a protest. It's a I mean, I guess it's a protest. They are the miners there have been literally like blocking. I mean, it's a pretty strong protest, blocking roadways because their company, which is in receivership, apparently is just not paying them their wages.
Yeah.
And
no, I think you're absolutely right. That's why he said it, because his campaign and he are hyper aware of all of these strikes and labor movements happening all over the country.
I mean, it strikes me that Bernie is setting it up. And I had asked him this question when he was on the show shortly after his Democratic Socialist speech. Whatever he's building, he intends to run it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Regardless of what happens with this election.
Yeah, I think so.
And I find that
that was a really interesting. Maybe this is not the correct reading, but it feels like a pretty pointed critique of the Obama administration, right? Which and one of the original sins of the first term, the massive demobilization of the organization they built in favor of their sort of inside strategy, right?
Yeah, remind people of that because we have a lot of youngins around here.
The 2008 Obama campaign was a massive, massive grassroots organization. You know, they built this giant list. They could have done so many things with it. And then sort of what happened when they actually got into the White House was they brought in people like Rahm Emanuel, whose strategy was totally inside. He was like, here's our legislative agenda. We're going to get corporate stakeholders on board. We're going to woo congressmen and senators the traditional way. And they let their grassroots organization that they had built their campaign around wither on the vine.
I would even say it more pointedly, they suffocated it.
They did, yeah.
I mean, I think that they were afraid of that existing yes. outside of there. It wasn't just a question of like it was inattention. It was, I think, a deliberate, because you remember in the summer of 2008, right after he became the nominee, you remember that word went out to all outside donors, do not contribute to outside groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do not. Yep. I mean, it was and there was you can find there was a lot of people who were very across the board. All of a sudden, the funding for everything, people who are agitating for Medicare for all was a big thing at that time, trying to push. There was all sorts of people, you know, marriage equality, immigration. Mm. I mean, a whole host of different things. And they put out the word, you donate to us.
Yeah.
You do not donate to them.
Yeah.
And they were very clearly afraid of OFA, which was Obama for America, and then became something. Organizing for America.
Organizing for America, right.
And it literally just disappeared.
Yeah.
They never, ever used it.
Yeah.
And And I think that was by design. And Bernie Sanders seems to be saying, like, I don't care who's president.
Yeah.
I'm going to be president, well, or, you know, but guess what? That OFA that I'm building.
Yeah.
That's going to, you know.
Well, this is what I was sort of alluding to. It's remarkable that his campaign's already doing this by telling, by sending, you know, text alerts to people that there's a strike happening. You can go demonstrate in support of it, you know? Like, that's only barely presidential campaign politics, right?
Right.
That's just organizing.
Right. I mean, I think there is an argument that it could be detrimental to the campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, you're using resources.
Yeah.
To organize, but it is certainly not detrimental to being president.
No. Right.
And it is certainly not detrimental towards obviously building an organization that is going to have, if handled correctly, is going to have a lot of power and a lot of ability to help or hinder an agenda that the president has.
And so, did you see the New York Times thing with the map of the donors that they just did up a little while ago?
Yes, actually. We were just pre-show, we were all just looking at it, and it's
remarkable because, you know, not to fall into the fallacy of like geography equals population, but it's Sanders is all over the, like, every corner of the country.
Yeah.
Every corner of the country.
Look at this beautiful map I got.
here, get it, see if you can get it in full size there. Okay, so there it is. The red, dark red is Beto O'Rourke. That's Texas. The light red is Klobuchar. She's up in Minnesota.
Oh, Bernie went in oil country, North Dakota. Yeah.
Bullock is doing pretty good in, where is he from? Montana, right?
Yeah.
And then you can see Biden. Look at the Biden support. It's just... Biden support is yellow, orange, and it literally looks like just... The sun froze on the horizon, like it just crept up and just froze there. And then the world stopped turning on its axis. Buttigieg is doing all right in his part of town. And then it is Sanders everywhere.
Yeah.
California.
Yeah. Crazy. California was crazy to me because Harris has a lot of donors and a lot of money, but that's remarkable.
Yeah, it really is crazy. And you don't, I mean, I don't see, Warren has the second biggest.
Yeah. And I think so. She's just like, if they have another map where they took Bernie out and it's Warren, is basically the rest of the map is Warren.
Right.
But he's just like, I mean, he's what got double her practically. Yeah. Double the number of individual donors practically.
It really is stunning. And now, of course, I guess the other thing you'd want to see is like, what does Trump's look like?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I would also want to see this in terms of like, I would love to have seen this graph for Clinton too.
Yeah.
Particularly at this stage.
Right.
Because, you know, the real question is going to be, and let's turn to Joe Biden. Obviously, I imagine, Alex, you watched the debates this week?
I did, yes.
This is, what are we watching here?
This is the Go to Joe 3-0.
Okay. Now, give me your sense of what Joe Biden's performance was in the debate up to this moment.
Like... treading water, I think, or like, I don't know. Does that seem fair?
Yes. Yeah. I thought it was like shaky in some areas, but would have forgotten about it.
Yeah.
Would have forgotten about it.
Like if he had, yeah. Yeah.
There
was,
I think, like, you know, like the get that Vice thing that they put up. Let's play that one first, because I don't think this gets made. This Vice compilation gets made if Biden doesn't have this problem at the end. Let's play the one at the end first, and then you can play the Vice one. Yeah.
Go to Joe 30330 and help me.
go there.
And it was tough. But it wasn't just that, too. He had a slip right before that in his closing statement. Go back in that closing statement for a moment. You don't have any time. Just in that, you have the whole closing statement there. You don't in that?
No, I just have the Joe 303 thing.
He had a slip in there too. And then I think that becomes, in some respects, the narrative.
Yeah.
And then people start to remember this. Do we have this the rest of this stuff? We'll pull it up. And I'm curious as what your sense is. Like, I have not had the time to watch the here's this. This was by was this the Vice one? Oh, these are the full closing marks. Okay, here it is.
I'm running to lead this country because I think it's important we restore the soul of this nation. This president has ripped it out. It's the only president in our history who has equated racist and white supremacist with ordinary and decent people. He's the only president who has engaged and embraced dictators and thumbed their nose at our allies. I'm secondly running for president because I think we have to restore the backbone of America. The poor and hardworking middle class people. You can't do that without replacing them with the dignity they once had. Lastly, we got to unite the United States of America as much as anybody says we can. If we do, there's not a single thing the American people can't do. This is the United States of America. We can do anything if we're together, together. So God bless you all and may God protect our troops.
Wait, that was it? That wasn't. That couldn't have been it because he didn't do the Joe 303. Well, nevertheless, but you saw that was from the Daily Caller, right? And this gets to the point is that he's going to go up there and Donald Trump will mock him for that.
He will. Yeah.
And it also has me a little bit concerned because I have seen footage of Joe Biden in the past and he may say ridiculous things.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that fumbling as much.
No, that delivery. Like he's, you know, usually he's very confidently saying foolish things.
Right, exactly.
What actually kind of bugged me after the debate was done was I noticed that, but it felt like no one wanted to talk about it on CNN. Like maybe just because they all had their sort of pre-baked takes and they had to get their sort of the takes they had developed before the debate started, they had to sort of get those out there. But I don't know. It felt like it should have been mentioned how shaky that was.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, because I have not watched that much cable television, although last night I went and did Hayes's program, and the first segment there was a lot of talk about Joe Biden being a little bit shaky.
Yeah.
And it was... And to hear it there, top of the show, Joe Biden's looking a little shaky. You know, at the end of the day, it's like this is sort of like the establishment-y place.
Yeah.
And if people are starting to say that, I mean, that is the one thing that sort of, you know, because I'm very concerned that we're going to go into the general election from the perspective of wanting Trump gone. And we're going to go into the general election with someone that nobody seems terribly enthused about.
Mm-hmm.
But gets across the finish line.
Yeah.
And then turns out to be like, you know, there because of like a projection of who he was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the worst case scenario in my mind is, or the second worst case scenario in my mind is Joe Biden as the nominee. Mm. The worst case scenario in my mind is a like a lame Joe Biden.
Yeah, like a diminished Joe Biden.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And here is a moment where, yeah, this is a compilation of him getting beat up by people. And like you said, I think this is what Warren and Sanders probably wanted was like other people to do this so that they
to be the Chris Christie. That's how I was talking about it with someone else.
Well, I think at some level, right. Bill de Blasio was going
to
do that.
Bill de Blasio was supposed to be the Chris Christie.
But he didn't quite get there. He started strong.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He didn't bring up that meeting more than once, which was a big mistake.
Yeah.
But he did bring up TPP.
Yep.
And we'll talk about that in a moment because I think that was actually, I think he did exactly what he was supposed to do with TPP.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Vice President Biden, you're just simply inaccurate.
Mr. Vice President, there's a saying in my community, you're dipping into the Kool-Aid and you don't even know the flavor.
Mr. Vice President, you want to be President of the United States. You need to be able to answer the tough questions. I guarantee you, if you're debating Donald Trump, he's not going to let you off the hook.
Senator Biden, your plan will keep and allow insurance companies to remain with status quo, doing business as usual.
Mr. Vice President, your argument is not with me, it's with science. And unfortunately, your plan is just too late. The science tells us we have to get off coal in 10 years. Yes. Your plan does not do that.
Vice President Biden, I didn't hear your response when the issue came up of all those deportations. You were Vice President of the United States. I didn't hear whether you tried to stop them or not using your power, your influence in the White House.
Mr. Vice President, you can't have it both ways. You invoke President Obama more than anybody in this campaign. You can't do it when it's convenient and then dodge it when it's not.
So what we need are politicians that actually have some guts on this issue.
This really irks me because I heard the Vice President say that. If you got a PhD, you can come right into this country. Well, that's playing into what the Republicans want, to pit some immigrants against other immigrants. And if you want to compare records, and frankly, I'm shocked that you do, I am happy to do that.
What Vice President helped author in 94 was a mistake, and he has flip-flopped on these things.
Vice President Biden was in the United States Senate working with segregationists.
You said women working outside the home would lead to the deterioration of family. My grandmother worked outside the home. So my mother worked outside the home.
But it was wrong to take the position that he took at that time.
Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't.
There are people right now in prison for life for drug offenses because you stood up and used that tough on crime, phony rhetoric that got a lot of people elected, but destroyed communities like mine. All of the problems that he is talking about that he created, I actually led the bill that got passed into law that reverses the damage.
On the Hyde Amendment, Vice President, where you made a decision for years to withhold resources to poor women to have access to reproductive health care, and including women who were the victims of rape and incest.
You didn't answer my question. What did you mean when you said, when a woman works outside the home, it's resulting in, quote, the deterioration of family.
No,
we are avoiding. These are quotes. It was the title of the op-ed.
You do nothing to hold the insurance companies to task for what they have been doing to American families.
Mr. Vice President, I didn't interrupt you. Sorry, please show me that respect, sir.
Wow. I mean,
the journey.
I almost feel bad for
him.
Yeah,
he looks like genuinely hurt in so much of that video.
I think he comes off as that's the most sympathetic I think I've seen.
Like watching all that edited together, I'm suddenly like, oh, Joe. He
walks home like George Michael in Arrested Development.
Like, oh, man.
I mean, on some level, he comes off as a lot less sympathetic when he's actually given a chance to speak.
Yeah.
That's why he's in Arrest to Shut Up all the time.
I imagine that's part of it.
Yeah, and that was, speaking of like his performance, that was the other remarkable thing, was he kept just being like ending his, like just being like, and now I'm done, like no more.
there was like he's in the middle of a sentence, a senator, and he's like, okay,
yeah,
I'll just stop right there.
I'll stop right there.
This is one of the things they were saying on that panel last night, which was that he's not like the happy warrior.
Yeah.
That he, and I tend to think that stuff is, you know, silly a little bit.
Yeah. Totally.
But I can see what they meant by that. It seemed to be exhausting and laborious for him.
Yes.
Rather than.
He wasn't like enjoying the opportunity to do.
I think it's a little bit. Well, I don't know. I guess in those instances when I'm getting into arguments with people, that's actually probably when I'm my happiest. But I think that, like, but it shouldn't be the most exhausting thing if you're starting out at the beginning of a presidential campaign.
Yeah, well, yeah, right.
To be questioned.
This is the very beginning. And next time when there's a much smaller group of people on that stage, he's going to have to talk more and talk longer. It's not going to be, you have 10 seconds to respond.
Well, with that said, there's going to be 10 people.
That's true.
And there's going to be more parity. So they're not going to be able to ignore two or three people at the edges in the way that they happen, or maybe they will, but he's not going to have to talk more until it's down to like seven or six people.
Right.
And who knows when that comes? I mean, on some level, if I was someone who wanted to charge the DNC with protecting Joe Biden, I would be complaining that they're not cutting it down to six.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like that, this is the best case scenario for him.
Right.
Keep it 20 people.
Yeah. And especially because next time people are going to be taking shots, a lot more shots at Sanders.
I would think so.
Yeah.
But I think there is, I mean.
Oh, the funny thing about the debate so far is the palpable frustration that taking shots at Sanders has not resulted in popularity. Like among the like Bullocks and Delaney's or whatever, they keep being like, why isn't this working?
Well, they're all the Chris Christies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they're the Chris Christies for Biden.
Yeah.
And it's not working.
Yes.
And this is the thing that struck me in that first debate, and I think it's the case of really the two of them combined. The progressives are ascendant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, do you remember a debate?
No.
That was like what Sanders and Warren were saying. Obviously, they say it. Their ideas are much more formed, and they're much more tested in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Tested insofar as like they've been attacked for quite a while and taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the two who you usually see on the end.
That's what's incredible to me is that watching that the first night. Was that the Kucinich on stage was the moderate white guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, that was the Kucinich.
Exactly.
Was the guy who kept being like, I'm the mainstream centrist.
Right. Who's that kook on the end?
Who's that complete nut?
Sticking up for the private market.
Honestly. Yeah. Like, have you had that sensation in your entire adult life?
No.
I mean, period? I mean, I don't know what you were doing as a kid watching.
Yeah, right. I mean, I was watching the debate.
So I was, too, but I wasn't quite as savvy.
Yeah.
That, to me, I mean, people were like, that debate, you know, I saw someone say, like, that debate was mad. And I was like, are you kidding? That was one of the most exciting things I feel like I've ever seen. Like, it was like, I was getting, like, that dynamic is amazing.
It really
and
is.
It didn't go away in the second debate.
No.
Right? I mean, there was nobody who was put on the defensive.
Right.
For their espousing the most left position.
Right.
Some people might say your numbers are a little bit weird or I don't know. I trust you. But like everyone is headed in that direction.
Yeah.
And to the extent that anybody's not, it's really just sort of like. It's an argument of like political pragmatism as opposed to what's a good idea or a bad idea.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that no one is really even trying to attack these progressive ideas on the merits, and because the only argument people are making is like I'm going to do the electable version of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I think is amazing.
Yeah.
In terms of where the party has gone in such a relatively short period of time, and I mean, frankly, it is as if everyone is running. On, I mean, I think at one point I tweeted out, like, you know, my Medicare for All plan is called Medicare for something that sounds like what Bernie's proposing, but is not.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really got that sense, which is just in terms of people who are, you know, I'm voting for an issue, frankly, a couple of issues.
Right.
And that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Assuming that. The trajectory goes in that way. What do you think is going to happen with Biden? Like, how much of this notion of he may not be up to the task, how much do you think it is permeated in? At what point does that leak out?
Well,
or bleed out, I guess I should say.
I think it, my feeling is that we're going to stay right where we are with the polling numbers for the rest of the summer. And then, if he has more performances like the one this week, I can see it all changing fairly quickly. Just because, you know, for the, if we assume his base is a little older, not paying that close attention, like once they do, they will have viable alternatives to him if they watch him and are like, oh, that's not the guy I remember. But that does depend on whether this last performance was a fluke or whether it's actually indicative of that he's not as vital as he was before.
Okay, let's move to another topic, because there's basically, as far as I can tell, sort of like three stories that are going on now, right? I mean, there is what's happening with the presidential race and what that says about the party. What's happening with impeachment and what that says about the party. Mm-hmm. And then what's happening in terms of like legislatively and then what that says about the party. And yeah. They're all three different stories.
Yeah.
The presidential race is the most sort of like heartening, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
Let's look at this, what's going on now with impeachment. We now have 117 House Democrats who support an impeachment inquiry. Here is Chris Hayes with Pramila Jayapal on. This is something different, right? Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about that later then. All right. Let's just talk about the impeachment.
Yeah.
In the wake, and we're in the wake of the Mueller hearings, which is sort of shocking because that was only a week and a half ago.
Right.
Not even a week and a half ago. It was a week ago Thursday, right? Or Wednesday.
Yeah.
Close to a week and a half ago.
Man.
Right. 9 days ago.
9 days.
I mean, I remember in the last cycle, I could have told you what I had for lunch, you know, like 22 days ago.
Right. Yeah.
And now I can't even remember what day it was that we did 6 hours of coverage.
Yeah.
But we've just crossed the threshold. There's a couple of members of the leadership. What you said to me about Nancy Pelosi worried about Chuck Schumer,
yeah,
getting those votes in the Senate, has been almost the only thing I've been able to think of since you told me that.
Yeah.
And I get the sense that, like, that's the case. Patty Murray came out in for impeachment. She's mm-hmm. number mm-hmm. three in the Senate.
Yep.
It is weird how quiet Chuck Schumer is about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just give me your sense of how you think this moves forward. At one point, Nancy Pelosi has to do something, right?
Like, yeah.
And you can slow walk it, and you can say in October, like, it's too late.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why you can't have impeachment hearings, I don't know, up until June of next year without anybody going like, hey, this is too close to an election. Although I don't even know why you have to wait until.
Yeah, why do you have to?
What norms are we supposed to be following here?
I don't. Right. Exactly. Well, you know, it's recess right now. Right. So you can't do anything basically for August. Like August is just written off in the congressional schedule. I don't know what Pelosi does now, because it does seem like we've crossed a threshold with the number of Democrats and the high-ranking Democrats who are now on the other side of her. And I imagine that she's just going to go back to some variation on the we have to protect our vulnerable moderate argument again. But
somebody came out from Florida today. Was it there was someone who came out from Florida today in support of impeachment, and they're in a purple district.
Yeah.
I mean, they're some of the frontliners. When some of the frontliners start coming out for impeachment, right?
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
It becomes a problem. For
yeah.
Is it Ted Deutsch?
I think it was Deutsch, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe we actually will get hearings. Like, maybe there actually will be an inquiry. It does seem like, I thought she was very successfully holding it off this entire time until basically the last week. And now it really seems like her hand might be forced, but I don't know.
What do you make of the resignations that we're seeing from Republicans?
Yeah, that's interesting, because you don't like, it doesn't feel, you know, Trump's going to be on the ballot. And one of the things that happened in the last midterms was presumably the Trump vote was less than it was in 2016, which led to part of the Democratic wave. So, but Trump's going to be back on the ballot. I don't know. You know, like, they seem to, maybe they know something we don't about, like, Texas and about, like, their base's enthusiasm, right? There's something that...
We should say that of the seven or eight that have now announced a resignation, like, five of them are from Texas, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
And the Texas right now is also, like, the state GOP is, like, in the middle of a civil war. Have you read anything about this?
No.
It's like the... I don't know all the details, and my Texas journalist friends will yell at me if I got it wrong, but the House of Representatives, like, the... I think maybe, like, the second or third ranking Republican was, like, caught on tape promising to end the careers of, like, eight other Republicans. And they're just, like, I think the Republican Party there... They've been in power for so damn long, but there's real divisions there. But I don't know. You get the feeling that maybe they're more worried about like where that state is going than they let on.
There was a poll that came out that showed Beto O'Rourke beating Donald Trump there by like 8 points.
Yeah, yeah, by like a lot. Yeah,
that's nuts.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's crazy.
That's nuts.
Yeah,
and they have now, there's two facts. One is that I said resignations. What I meant is they're not going to run for re-election,
yeah.
Hurd is the latest
to
resign, and he is the only black U.S. congressman who is a Republican.
Yeah. So this is the other thing that this is going to mean, too. And I have written about this and a while ago, is that the GOP... in the near term is going to get so much crazier, and they're going to retain a lot of power because that's the way our elections work. They will retain a lot of power, but the individuals making up the elected officials of the Republican Party are not going to get more sane. They're just going to get worse.
I couldn't agree more with that. This notion that somehow like the fever's going to break or that you can go and convince. We're in a war of attrition, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's basically it. They have to, for the Republicans to change, they have to lose decisively.
Yes.
It can't even be close because they will claw back or they will believe that they will claw back or they will have no other option but to attempt to claw back.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that gets into the McConnell stuff with this that you wrote a piece on, I think, just yesterday or today. And we should talk about it, but I need to say this just to remind people. I headlined it. With the announcement from the congresswoman from Alabama, she was on the judiciary. Who is it? Robbie? The Republicans will have, I think, only 12 women in their caucus, which is nuts.
That's insane, yeah.
Right? Like less than 10%, I think, of their caucus are women.
Yeah.
They will have more members in their caucus named Jim than they will have women.
Yeah.
Just name Jim.
Right.
It's 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
freaking nuts.
And then all of that in the context of a system that is designed to make it likely that they win 50% of the time and 50%. Right. Like,
that's right.
It's insane.
That's right. In fact, it's basically whether you go from like Wisconsin to the national stage, 46% is a decisive victory for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And part of that explains why Mitch McConnell, as much as he doesn't like Moscow Mitch, it's so funny, like how he seems to actually genuinely get upset about that.
It's wild. Usually it's like he lets everything just roll right off him, but he's actually was mad about that.
Now, part of it could be there's also some type of investigation that's going on, I believe, with the Justice Department, which is odd, or that. There's a business in Kentucky that got a tremendous amount of investment Russia shortly after he voted against, he voted to end sanctions.
Right.
It's a foghorn.
There you go. But So maybe he's just afraid that you know, he wants to show that, like, hey, if you mess around talking about this stuff, this is just normal corruption. It's right. Not because it's Russia.
Yeah,
it's
just
like I voted in favor of an entity that's going to give bring back some largesse. It's not.
I mean, the thing is, like, you look at his entire history, and like foreign governments have bought him off before. So I think it's maybe he's just like, it's not Russia. It's just like anyone. I'm just open for business.
Exactly. Cocaine Mitch captures it more. Moscow Mitch makes it sound like I'm in league with Moscow. No, I'm in league with money.
Yeah.
But just the fact that he's not voting for these election protections, you got pretty granular with it to sort of express like what parts of it he's worried about.
Right. And so the Democratic election security bills, and there's a bunch of them, because they were bringing them out in the wake of the Mueller hearings, they were focusing mainly on the ones that are about not accepting contributions, both monetary and like non-monetary, like intelligence or from foreign nationals, right? And he blocked those, and some like unnamed Republicans told the New York Times, like, well, you know, he actually just doesn't like any regulations of money in campaigns. So it's not Russia.
Right.
He just wants everyone to be bribeable.
Right. He doesn't want to set a precedent that will impinge on the Koch brothers.
But like I think the most significant bill the Democrats have that in a world where politics behaved the way centrist pundits wished it did, this is a bill that would actually have a chance of passing a Republican Senate, I think, because the bill is mainly just about requiring paper ballot receipts for federal elections and then having a federally monitored process for auditing elections. And
that sounds highly controversial.
It doesn't. Doesn't it sound highly controversial? Doesn't it? And paper ballot, like, Mark Meadows has a paper ballot bill in the House. Like, Republicans have come out in favor of paper ballots in the past. But they really, like, they don't do it in a way where they're doing it in a way that allows Mitch McConnell to block anything from happening. Right. So I think it's a way of signaling that you care about election integrity without ever having to actually do anything.
Well, it's the only way that you can be consistent when you're pushing all these like voter ID laws and whatnot and saying how important it is that we have this maintain. Well, why wouldn't you want to make sure that there's a way to count that the ballots are accurate?
Yeah. And then so you look at what happened in Georgia, where the governor, who was the Secretary of State during the election for the governorship, like, Georgia has voting machines that they purchased in 2002 after the Help America Vote Act, which have no paper receipts at all and basically can't be audited. And people are suing Brian Kemp over this, and they want to institute the paper ballots right now. And you know, like, Georgia could do that tomorrow if they wanted to, but they don't want to. Like, and the reason they don't want to is, like, irregularities help them. Like,
right.
Almost inevitably, irregularities help them.
Well, and there was also, I mean, I haven't followed this too closely, but not only did they destroy the servers to get rid of the information after the suit was brought, right? Like, on that day.
They've been, like, wiping, they've been wiping the memory.
With magnets.
Yes.
Like, they've been doing it in the way that you would do it if you were,
like,
I'm afraid of, like, I've got, you know, stuff on my computer that people shouldn't see.
Yeah. They're doing it in a very, like, losing this lawsuit will be much less damaging than anyone seeing what is on here.
Even getting some type of fine or, you know, destroying evidence is worth it. That charge is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit scary.
It is.
And coupled with the fact that, you know, we know that, according at least to the reports that came out of the Senate, I guess it was last week, right after, right before the vote or right after the vote, was that the Russians had hacked into all 50 states, maybe not on a statewide, but maybe on a countywide.
Yeah, like
there was examples
like a county. There were examples in every state
of them going in. Not necessarily doing anything, but just basically saying, like, oh, we have access to this.
Yeah, it almost, you can just imagine that like the Russian hacker just being like, oh, like I shouldn't be in here, right? Like, because they didn't, I don't think there's any evidence they did anything, but they must have just been like, oh, that shouldn't be this easy.
Right. Yeah. You get the sense, that like one guy came up and said, you know, like, Commander, I was able to get into Rhode Island.
Yeah. Like,
and they said, seriously? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, go see if you can do it in other states.
Yeah.
And then he comes back in a half an hour later and he's like, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine. Well, by God damn it, get back to the computer and see if you can do all 50.
Yeah.
And they come back and they're like, we can do all 50. And they're like, wow, all right. But it's good to know. I mean, like, you know, and you know, the reality is that you or I, anybody in this room probably could sit down and come up with like, all right, let's just pick 20 counties.
Yeah.
And we're going to change the outcome of the national election. I mean, you know.
And, you know, the even as easily.
Not in
just
terms
by,
of changing the votes.
But by throwing people, by changing the registrations, throw people off. And the insecurity of the system has been well known for a very long time. I was reading journalism from like 2004 when I was writing about Mitch McConnell, just because it was about the Help America Vote Act, which was passed very bipartisan in the wake of the 2000 election. Which is a terrible piece of legislation because it didn't actually do anything to fix our what is very easily known to be the vulnerabilities of our system. But back in 2004, there people were saying these machines everyone bought are the software is horrible and the only people who know how to patch it are the people who manufactured it and they're it's vulnerable to being hacked by college students. Like all these things are known and like the way to fix it is with this bill the Democrats introduced, which is basically just like. You get a paper receipt, and then when there's an audit, you count the paper ballots.
Why do you think that this issue, and I'm guilty of it to a certain extent as well, because I've certainly, you know, over the years, remember that black box group, Beverly, I can't remember her name, and there was, you know, certainly John Kerry has said on the record at this point that he thinks that there were shenanigans in Ohio in 2004.
Yeah.
He wouldn't talk about it at the time.
Nope.
Why do you think this doesn't get traction in the popular sort of like, it sort of feels like it's almost like climate change. Like it's sort of like, how do you,
I think because it sounds conspiratorial on the one hand, because you are edging up to alleging without solid evidence that elections are being stolen. And that sounds conspiratorial. And it also like gets at the entire legitimacy of our system, right? And a lot of people don't like to think difficult questions about the legitimacy of our entire system because it starts to make them get nervous. And, you know, I think when you look... So we run elections this way on purpose because... in part because the GOP wants their state secretaries of state to have the ability to throw thousands of people off the voter rolls.
Right.
And like, to be fair, and here in New York, Democrats do that.
Yep.
They threw hundreds of thousands of people illegally off the voter rolls in advance of Democratic primaries a few years ago.
Yep.
But primarily it's a thing outside of blue states. Primarily it's a thing where Republicans want to maintain the right to screw with the electorate. But when the reason it doesn't get more traction is I think it doesn't get more traction because it sounds too conspiratorial to say it, basically.
I wonder too if it's a question of like, if we have evidence that this has happened, how do you obviously the only thing you can do is fix it for the future.
But
there's going to be a lot of people going like, hey, wait a second.
Yeah. Like
that means that the Supreme Court is illegitimate.
Yes, exactly.
That means that all the laws that have been signed are illegitimate.
That all
that
the, means these the hundreds of judges that have been
the wars shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, I mean, it means that the global temperature should be a few degrees cooler, maybe.
Right. Like, I mean, you have to start going backwards.
Yeah.
And it starts to make you wonder, like, you know, at what point do you? Let's take a quick break. Judy Gold is going to join us. Can you hang out?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, great. Judy Gold is going to join us. I have a feeling her assessment of this stuff is going to be a little bit more explicit. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Judy Gold.
Judy Gold.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a casual Friday. Sometimes we get a little bit casual with the for radio appropriate language. Let me play a little song that I think will explain.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy Gold.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding. That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the
fuck? Judy?
Hi! Hey! Oh!
You sound like you're in a great mood.
Oh, I can't even. Like, I can't even. Like, he texted, okay? Really bad news. The Baltimore house of Elijah Cummings was robbed. Too bad. Like, what the fuck is wrong with this motherfucker? What is wrong with him? And why is he still there? Why is he still there?
Well, I mean, I think it's
who the fuck? Yeah.
I mean, I think he's...
go ahead.
I think it's pretty clear he's going to be there until, at the very least... until January 20th of 2021.
Mm-hmm. Okay, listen. We're having impeachment inquiry. We're going to have impeachment inquiry, and we're going to look into this. It's like, shut the fuck up and do something. I can't. None of us have balls. And then, and the narrative is all him. Like that debate. It's like, oh, fuck you, and you said that. And that's exactly what they want. That's exactly what they want. That's exactly. And he sits there with his tiny dick and his fucking Stephen Miller bald piece of shit, and they laugh and laugh with their fucking Kentucky Fried Chicken. Fuck them, okay? We can't feed into this narrative. He's a piece of, he's so immature. He's so disgusting. He's such a fucking liar. Such a fucking liar. And Mitch McConnell. I mean, look at him. He's the most heinous-looking human being in the entire world. We have no demand. We're done. We're done. This guy. Fuck you. It's unbelievable how fucking stupid we are, and that, you know, everyone in the fucking rally last night. Democrat mayor, you fucking piece of shit, sowing hatred, you fucking insecure mental case. He's a fucking, I cannot believe that he is still there, and there's Jerry Nadler, and like, and they're all standing there like, we're going to do the impeachment inquiry.
How's everything else going?
I can't believe it. I can't even deal with it anymore. That Elijah, he's a fucking bully. He's a bully. And they sit there and they're afraid of him. They're just afraid of him. Like, call me whatever you want. You can call me a big, you know, like, I just want to go to, like, yes, I know, I'm a big dyke, I'm an asshole, I'm a, you know, I'm a Jew, I'm not funny, but you're ruining the fucking world, you stupid, tiny dick piece of shit. How has he not had a stroke? How has he not had a stroke? I don't understand it.
I mean, that is...
That's actually a really
good
question.
I think a full-on, legit question.
I know! He eats like shit. And what's going to happen afterwards? Like, when he's out and they're all like, yeah, he was an asshole, but, you know, I have more money. Like, what? How do these people, and what about all the singing groups now with all the women are like, we love Trump, and they're just, you know, like, whatever. I cannot believe how bad it's gotten. You know, I used to wake up in the morning, I'd put on MSNBC, and I'd be like, oh, he'll be out by 2:30, 2:45 in the afternoon, okay? But no, he's still fucking there. I wake up, I'm like, oh, there's no way he can survive this, and he's still fucking there. The Democrats have no balls. They're fighting with each other on stage. It's like no one wants to hear your fucking intricacies of the healthcare plan. Someone get up there and say, look, look what's happening in this country. We have to fix it. I'm going to do it. I'll be your leader. We cannot continue like this.
All right. Now, wait a second. Let me just ask you this. I got a couple of questions now for you. One, are you watching more or less MSNBC these days?
I'm switching around to CNN. I'm reading more because I can't deal with it. I can't. It's just, you know, you just go on and on. Well, I did see you last night and you look so hot.
Oh, well, thank you.
I just want to say, Sam, you know, Elisa, my girlfriend, was like, oh, I love him so much. I'm like, you know what, Elisa? Go fuck him. Go do it. Get it over with. Because I can't listen to every fucking time he's on. Oh, my God. Look at him. He's so hot. It's like annoying. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, she's laughing right now. Now she's laughing. Oh, look at Sam. Look at him. He has this. Oh, because we were making fun of fuck de Blasio. What the fuck is he? What are those teeth? Literally, what are those fucking teeth? Okay. Oh. He has a sideburn from like 1975, right?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I do too a little bit, right?
No! Oh, that's not what happened. We were looking at his sideburn. Everyone's like, oh, look at his sideburn. And then you come on, and Elisa's like, well, Sam has sideburns, but they look really good. Okay? Seriously.
I appreciate that. All right, but okay. So then here's the other question. Don't you think we're doing an array of sideburn videos now? Don't you think that? Did people really? I guess CBS did a thing about his sideburns. Wow!
No, they didn't.
Local CBS News did a thing with his sideburns.
Oh my God! Are you kidding? Yeah,
they are pretty long.
They're long. They make no sense. And he has those teeth. What are those teeth? Seriously.
All right. Well, aside from the teeth,
and him yelling.
But wait.
It's like de Blasio, you're yelling at these people. Okay. I got on the subway yesterday at 7 a.m. to go to Penn Station, and I'm still fucking waiting for the train, asshole.
Well, all right. But that's more Cuomo's fault than de Blasio's. But be that as it may. But don't you think, Judy, now you go around, right? You go around. Well, now you're headed to Massachusetts, I guess, this week, this month, right? You go to Provincetown.
I'm here. I'm in Provincetown.
Oh, yeah. You're in Provincetown now. Okay, yeah. So you're out there for the month, but in Provincetown's maybe not exactly, you know, representative of like the country across the board in terms of Trump. But
yes, okay, I know that. I know that. But you know what? Last night I had three Trump supporters in the audience. Three.
Oh, Jesus.
First of all, coincidentally, we're all wearing orange. And then I started, and they won't laugh. Like I did, I started doing a joke and they kind of interrupt. You can just tell because they don't clap at anything. They're the most miserable fucking sabissina fucks in the audience. And I'm like, you're Trump supporters. And they wouldn't say anything. But it took me a half an hour for them to like go, all right, she's funny. You know what I mean? But I was like, you know, every other fucking president was fair game. And this one can't take a fucking joke, but he just dishes it out. He's not even funny. He thinks he's a big comedian. Like he gets one laugh and he's like goes off on some tangent, like some shitty hack, you know, like, oh yeah, then they did that. I hate it. He's such a fucking piece of shit. They will not laugh at you because of your political leaning with you. They can't get over it. It's like a cult. It's a fucking cult.
Now, but wait a second. So, all right. Well, here's the point. And I'm glad you brought that up because my question to you was, don't you have, and this gets to the Democrats fighting amongst themselves, because this is what a primary is supposed to be about, right? To flesh out what's the best ideas and, you know, what we've done in the past that have been helpful.
Right.
But is Donald Trump the the problem or the cause of the problem, or is he the symptom of the problem?
Well, I think he's all of it. And I think that it's all a referendum on having an African-American president who did his job with them fighting him all along the way. They're so fucking hypocritical. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe these people voted in an African-American. And now, you know, white power, he's a fucking white supremacist. I mean, who goes around and saying, I'm the least racist person? When you're such a fucking piece of shit. You're just a piece of shit. You don't even let black people into your fucking buildings, you scumbag. We have videos. And they're just like, because you know what? It just proves how fucking racist this goddamn country is. Now they're all coming out. They were all quiet and, you know, not saying anything. And now he gave them, and now we see what this country is filled with. Racists, idiots. People with no integrity who don't care if the president's a liar. Now he's like threatening Kim and the Chinese terror. Like, and he talks about himself in third person. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, now we're getting somewhere.
Like, who talks about themselves in third person? What?
Sam does occasionally.
Sorry
about that. Sorry.
It's really, and they sit there, and I just want to take Jerry Nadler and Chuck Schumer. I just want to go, yell like Bernie, okay?
Judy, now we're talking.
What?
Well, I mean, you know, it was funny because Bernie Sanders got criticism for his raising his hands and that he was supposedly yelling through it, and that stuff would have resonated, I think, 10 years ago in a Democratic debate, like this notion of like, what are you angry about? And you know, I mean, it's what sunk Howard Dean, or at least was the sort of the predicate.
Oh, I know.
And now I think that doesn't work, at least not in the same way. And you know, Jerry Nadler has a challenger now, who I think she opened her, basically her campaign, talking about impeachment. And the idea is that that's what's going to light a fire under Jerry.
Why are they? Yeah, exactly. It's like we're following every little rule, and you can't play with him, against him, if you're going to follow all the rules and he's going to ignore them and make his own. You can't do it. You know, you're not going to beat him at his own bullshit game. So do what you have to do. Call him a fucking liar. The New York Times with the fucking falsehood. It's not a falsehood. He's a fucking liar. He's a fucking liar.
Did you see this thing with Lindsey Graham and Paul and Leahy?
Oh, I did. Is that today?
No. So, and Alex, I think you'll appreciate this, and this will get. I don't know if you'll be as angry as Judy is about it, but I think you'll be angry. So, Lindsey Graham basically calls a committee hearing to talk about amending a law so that they are able to. I guess it implicates the Flores Agreement that they are able to basically keep children imprisoned for about another 75 days on top of where they are now at the border. And there wasn't enough Democrats to pass it out of committee. And so he basically threw the rules out that said that you need a certain quorum to do so. And then Patrick Leahy, who has been studious in maintaining the rules when he is chairman of the judiciary, much to the detriment of the country, in my estimation.
Right.
Did this little show where he got up and he tore up the laws and he said, like, you know, Lindsey Graham's going to ignore him. I'll just do it for you. And I thought, like, is it possible to do anything that would be more ineffectual at this time than to do this little kabuki theater? Because I know that Patrick Leahy has in his desk a bunch of scotch tape, and he's going to tape those up the moment that he becomes chairman
again.
You're
not kidding. You're not kidding.
This is the problem with the Democrats.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it's amazing how angry, it's seeped into, everyone's in a bad mood, everyone's angry. You really realize how he controls the zeitgeist. You know, it's amazing how fucking unbelievably, you know, irritated people are. They say what, I had a guy hit me in a theater because I was like, you know, I was sideways going into the aisle and my ass hit him. And he hit me. I go, what the, don't fucking hit me. He's like, well, that's the third time someone hit my head. I said, someone hit the other two people, you fucking asshole. But it's like, you know, I just don't understand that this, there's got to, like, all right, here's what, Obama could not be angry because they would call him an angry black man. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So he was, mm-hmm. and this one is angry. You can't cough in front of him. He's a fucking asshole. He yells at these journalists, these women of color. I mean, he's such an obvious misogynist, racist piece of shit. And he sits there and, yes, Mr. President, yes, yes, I do this. And it's no. No. Someone's got to say, you know what, Mr. President, you're a disgrace. You're a disgrace to this country and the world. It's, and your hair. What the fuck is that goddamn hair? Sorry.
The hair really is bothersome.
Also, I just want you to know someone just told me I'm homophobic on the tweetar.
You're homophobic?
Yeah. Yeah, I used homophobic slurs during my wine mom white lib femme rant. I used insults primarily reserved for gay men to not Trump. Oh, apparently now you have to be assigned the vocabulary according to your sexuality or gender. Okay, gotcha. You know what? Putin's got something on all of them, okay? On all of them. He's got Lindsey Graham, you know, getting a blowjob from some young boy. He's got it all. He's got shit on all of them.
On all of them.
I mean, yeah. The fact that Trump will go overseas and say shit about his own country and never says a fucking thing about Russia. And that, when he did that thing like, okay, stay out of the elections, all right? I just wanted to fucking rip his hair out so bad. I just want to fucking, God damn it. Someone's got to fucking do something.
You really do get the sense of, and of course, I'm being metaphorical when I discuss this. I want to make that absolutely clear. But you see, like, those situations, like where Saddam Hussein got caught and at the trial, and like people like abuse his body, or they did that with Gaddafi, I think, or something like that. Like, you get the sense that there would be an opportunity to do that here in a way that I had never sort of imagined
with an American president.
With an American president, right? Yeah. I mean, the anger towards Trump is.
Yeah.
The anger towards Trump is visceral in a way that, even though I think I certainly people hated George Bush, I among them. Mm-hmm. I mean, not personally, Bush didn't disgust me in the same way.
I thought. Okay, I can't stand looking at this guy. I can't stand him. But this is beyond that. Like, this is a whole other level of just, I've never seen anything like, I mean, remember when kids were like, I'm going to be president of the United States? Like, anyone. You know, that's why Marianne Williamson is there. It's because anyone can be president of the United States. Anyone.
You know, it's funny because Alex wrote a piece, a month ago?
Yeah, after the first debate.
Saying that Marianne Williamson was, well, you describe the piece.
If there was a Democratic version of Trump, it would look more like Marianne Williamson than anyone else. Because I think of what you identified. Anyone can be president, and she appeals to...
Right.
Sort of the non-policy-based desires of the base in terms of spirituality.
Right, but you're looking at her, if she's not evil, that's the difference. She's got she's like a guru.
You can say that that's the difference between the two bases, if you want, the two bases
right,
want.
Right, exactly.
She, I think, and had a comment, she said something to the effect, I think, after this last debate, I don't remember exactly the context, but basically saying, like, there's a lot more yoga moms out there than, she knows who she's playing to.
Yep.
And I imagine that it'll be interesting to see if she gets a bump after that last debate.
I'm not really sure, but my question I've been asking is, if the Democrats blow it this year, what happens to her in 2020? Or in 4 years down the line, I mean.
Or someone like
her.
Someone
like her,
yeah. I mean, she'll write another, she'll write a self-help.
Well,
like,
but I think there could be someone.
Love. I mean, okay, fine.
There could be someone out there who is like her, who understands. I mean, that was sort of the appeal of
policy?
Oprah on some level. I mean, aside from the fact that demographically, she's going to speak to the experiences of black women more than Marianne Williamson is. But she, Oprah's, a lot of what Oprah is about is sort of like a self-help, self-actualization type of a vibe. There could be
who
rises, who is of that ilk.
Yeah.
Right. So she's of self-help, you create your own reality. And, like when I'm always saying, like, I'm so fucking fat and people are like, Judy, if you keep saying that, then you will be. It's like, shut the fuck up. If I want to say I'm fat, I'm going to say I'm fat. I'm not going to fucking gain weight. So anyway, but she's of this self-actualization, right? And they're of, what are they of for helping people? They're like only for the rich. That's it. It's not so, it's like you have a lot of money, you're going to keep your money, and we're going to take it away from everyone else. Half of these fucking guys, their parents, their fathers were on the GI Bill. The government worked for them and their families. And now they become millionaires and they don't give a fucking shit.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. I think that's, I think that's right.
I mean, they it's not
pulling
like
the
their
ladder.
Parents and grandparents, they all hate FDR, fuck you. Sorry. You have to pay income tax. Sorry. I mean, look at the infrastructure. What happened to the infrastructure?
Infrastructure Week has been just going on and on and on.
And ongoing.
Fucking ridiculous. It's just, he feeds into it's all bullshit. It's a fucking television show. We have been taken over. I mean, the opening of that debate. What the fuck was that on CNN?
You're right.
Completely.
You're right.
It was like the fucking Olympics. What is going on? She has won 4 gold medals, but she had an injury last year, and she's back. I mean, it was like fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. That was all right. Well, listen, Judy, we got to wrap up.
I just want you to know, my watch went off in the middle of that and said, "You've reached your goal."
All right. Well, listen, I want to try something different this time. I want you to I want you to leave us with something that you think is positive that is going to be sustaining, because I will say this, that as you were talking about this, like, when Donald Trump goes away, the hunger for for self-help gurus and self-healing books and stuff like that. Like, I'm already in the middle of this conversation, I was like, what about a self-help that was like how to stay engaged but also disengage at the same time? One of those
Right.
don't, you know, right. don't let the pressure up, but here's a way to let the pressure off
or
something
that's
like, you know,
one. Yeah, that's a good one.
Somewhere around there. But okay. So, but we're not there yet. So, no okay. time for, you know, self-care.
You know what? Here's what? All I know. I know that, you know, in Puerto Rico, they went into the streets and said, enough. Okay? Enough already. And it's enough. And we've got to do something. We've got to get off our asses, the gerrymandering, the Russian interference. It's enough. It's enough. We have the power. Stop giving it to him. It's ridiculous. He doesn't fucking control. Well, I was going to say he doesn't control the world. but it's true. Stop sitting around and, you know, being angry like Judy Gold. Okay? Do something. Let's fucking do something.
She brought it around to talk about herself in the third person, after all. Judy?
I get it, because I'm just like him. I'm just like him. No, but seriously.
All right, well, listen.
It's you know, and second of all, Democrats, stop fighting with each other. It's fucking ridiculous. It's so stupid.
I don't think it's as bad as you're saying. I don't think it's as bad. This is healthy.
Really?
This is good. This is how you train. This is how you train. You don't want people to get out there who aren't used to fighting. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you.
No, I know.
The way you prep for a fight is you get into the ring with a sparring partner.
Do you think?
Yeah.
That he is going to debate the Democratic candidate?
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
Okay, that's all I want to know.
I think that it would be too risky not to. Because I think, first of all, he's got to feel like, first of all, somebody coming in and saying, like, we're afraid of you debating whomever it is.
He would immediately decide to debate them.
He would go like, are you kidding? Yeah. Of course I can debate them.
Right.
And the danger of this narrative, like, he's too afraid to debate. Like, I just don't think he has the resources to do a, why should I? Mm. Like, you know, I mean, I think you need to have enough insulation, and there's just too much of the country that would be like, whoa. Mm. I think he would have to debate. So I think he's going to, but, Judy,
okay,
yeah, let me tell you.
I think he would say, I don't have to debate. I know you know what I'm about and blah, 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 blah.
I think so, but I think it would come off as he's too afraid and he doesn't have the ability to own the media enough to do that. Like, I'm just thinking of Sean Hannity going like, why would the president debate? They would have to get so offended. Like, you know, why should he debate, Andrew Yang? He's just,
Right.
Judy, I'll tell you what there is no debate about. That your Kill Me Now podcast is tearing it up.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
And
I just had James, Father James Martin on.
Father James Martin? I don't know who that is.
Oh, my God. He's the greatest. James Martin, he's a Jesuit priest. He's the greatest guy. You got to listen to it. It's amazing.
Oh, wow.
And I have Joy Baker coming up in a couple weeks.
Oh,
so
great.
Listen,
people can check you out on Thursdays and Fridays, all the way till
Improv
August 30th, the entire month at the Art House, right?
Yes, in Provincetown, and my podcast.
And your podcast. Judy,
tell me now.
Thank you so much.
I love you, guys. I love you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Judy.
All right.
Judy Gold, everybody. Totally destroying our YouTube non-swearing friendly rating.
Well, they say you can say the F word as long as it's not up close to the beginning of the video, so we might be okay.
I think we could be okay.
Be a little test here.
It's a little bit late in the video, and it's also not in, it's not a, it's an adjective.
Yeah,
not,
none of it was.
None of it was a noun. Or I should say, none of it was describing an action.
None of it was describing an act.
Right. That's
an adverb.
Right. Although at one point there was something that struck me as like, that might have been all right, but whatever. I mean, look, that's just
the raunchiest it got was honestly about you.
Was about yeah. That's right. They got a little bit heated.
Actually, it was describing an action in that.
It was actually, yeah. But it completely theoretical. So, all right. Well, let's head into the fun half, and then we got Alex will stick around, and we got some more clips. Some from Morning Joe, obviously best place to look for your advice if you're a Democrat.
Mm-hmm. The guy who was Trump's best friend until he wasn't.
Right, exactly. Until he got thrown under the bus, as it were. And we've got some of the stuff from Donald Trump's rally, which we don't want to miss. And Jesse Waters weighing in on policy, which is always a fun thing to watch. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com for just pennies a day, and you get the fun half. Go back, listen to the debate I had earlier in the week. It wasn't even a debate. I had the Libertarian chairman on, the chairman of the Libertarian Party, mm-hmm. to ask him what it would take for me to run for and if I could go and espouse Medicare for all as a Libertarian candidate. Yeah. And he was pretty good natured about it. We had, and then we got into a little bit of a debate about some stuff. Mm-hmm. And, but he was, I would say, the best natured of all the Libertarians. There's been a couple that have been pretty good.
He was welcoming, though, of your run, I think.
He was.
You ever interviewed Gary Johnson? He would, when he ran last time, he would talk to anyone.
Yes. Yeah. But it wasn't, he wasn't terribly interested in defending libertarian principles.
No, he wasn't actually. Yeah, he really wasn't.
I actually interviewed like three or four people from the debates that ran against him.
Oh, yeah.
I sat on a couple of panels with Gary Johnson pre his run on MSNBC.
Right.
I was never impressed by his intellect.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I get surprised. I get super surprised in those situations.
Yeah.
Because I just presume, a certain level.
I presume a certain level of competence that sometimes, like when I was watching the debate, I was like, some of these people are just not good political communicators and don't have a lot going on upstairs.
Yeah. It's shocking.
It's a little
how
worrying
far
sometimes.
You can rise in American society. Without having what one would consider to be the sort of like the formula that you would want people to have.
Yeah. So I guess we should drop out.
But with that said, if you're a member, you can go back and listen to that episode. And you can listen back to any episode for that matter. Also, reminder, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And... enjoy the AM quickie. Every morning now, we give you a bite-sized headlines of the day. Is that something that you would enjoy?
That, certainly, yeah. I'd rather that than wake up and turn on MSNBC.
Exactly. This is going to give you 5 minutes of the stories you want. Super quick. It's in the Majority Report feed right now, the audio feed. But soon, we will have it on its own feed. And maybe its own, like, I don't know, we'll distribute it on YouTube as well. All right. Don't forget, Literary Hangover. What do you got this week?
I got The Pioneers by James Fenimore Cooper, Part 1, where James Fenimore Cooper basically writes about his dad as a good-natured but ultimately exploitative landlord of Otsego County in New York.
And make sure you check out The Antifada at patreon.com/TheAntifada. And TMBS was on Monday this week. Go back, check that out. Michael should be well rested by Tuesday. TMBS should be stellar next week. All right, see you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457-2-38-56-27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is gibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already. Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.